are walking in a circle. We are walking hand in hand. We are walking in a circle to create the promised land. We are loving one another. We are crossing the divide. We are walking with our mother and our sisters by our side. We're a circle in a spiral that's evolving towards the light. We're a bridge between the sunshine and the everlasting night. We are women of all nations. We are straight and we are gay, liberating generations at the dawn of a new day. We are dancing in a circle. We are dancing all around. We are dancing in a circle to create a higher ground. We're embracing one another as we're spinning round the sun. And we love Earth, our mother, and all creation. We are walking in a circle. We are walking hand in hand. We are walking in a circle to create the promised land, to create the promised land.
That beautiful, profound, and visionary song, Heralding a New Day, was created and performed by my guest, author, and independent researcher, Genevieve Vaughn. I believe the lyrics tell a great deal about her. From the introduction to her book, The Gift, A Feminist Analysis, Genevieve writes, "Gift-giving exists in many places, but it is made invisible by patriarchal capitalism. Two basic economic paradigms coexist in the world today. They are logically contradictory, but also complementary. One is visible, the other invisible. One highly valued, the other undervalued. One is connected with men, the other with women. What we need to do is validate the one connected with women, causing a basic shift in the values by which we direct our lives and policies. The present economic system, which is made to seem natural and too widespread to change, is based upon a simple operation in which individuals participate at many different levels and at many different times. This operation is exchange, which can be described as giving in order to receive. The motivation is self-oriented, since what is given returns under a different form to the giver or to satisfy her or his need. The satisfaction of the need of the other person is a means to the satisfaction of one's own need. Exchange requires identification of the things exchanged, as well as their measurement and assertion of their equivalence to the satisfaction of the exchangers, that neither is giving more than she or he is receiving. It therefore requires visibility, attracting attention even though it is done so often that the visibility is commonplace. Money enters the exchange, taking the place of products, reflecting their quantitative evaluation. This seemingly simple human interaction of exchange, since it is done so often, becomes a sort of archetype or magnet for other human interactions, making itself and whatever looks like it seem normal, while anything else is crazy. For example, we talk about exchanges of love, conversations, glances, favors, ideas. Since there is an equivalence asserted between what we give and what we receive, it seems that whoever has a lot, has produced a lot, or given a lot, and is, therefore, somehow more than whoever has less. Exchange puts the ego first and allows it to grow and develop in ways that emphasize me-first, competitive, and hierarchical behavior patterns. This ego is not an intrinsic part of the human being, but is a social product coming from the kinds of human interaction it is involved in. The alternative paradigm, which is hidden, or at least misidentified, is nurturing and generally other-oriented. Genevieve Vaughn is an independent researcher who was born in Texas and presently lives in Italy, and who has given vast amounts of money away to women to further the work of social change. She has been working on the theory of a maternal gift economy as an alternative to patriarchal capitalism for many years. Vaughn's book, Forgiving, A Feminist Critique of Exchange, and two edited books, The Gift, A Feminist Analysis, and Women and the Gift Economy, A Radically Different Worldview is Possible, her ebook, Homos Donans, two children's books, Mother Nature's Children and Free, Not Free, her CD, which we heard the first cut of, Songs for the Tree of Life, and a film on her life, Giving for Giving, and her many articles are available free at her website, www.economy.com. Genevieve founded and directed the Foundation for a Compassionate Society from 1987 to 1998, an all-women activist foundation for social change, information for which can also be found on the website, as well as the audio recordings of the presentations of many international women from the conference she organized. A Radically Different Worldview is Possible, The Gift Economy Inside and Outside Patriarchal Capitalism, that was in 2004, and the Second World Congress of Matriarchal Studies in 2005 under the direction of Heidi Gottner-Abendroth. In 1992, Genevieve created a temple to the Egyptian goddess Sekhmet near the nuclear test site in the Nevada desert. The temple is still in existence and open to visitors. Genevieve is also the mother of three beautiful daughters. In the past year, Genevieve has presented talks in St. Poulton and Graz, Austria, and was the keynote speaker in Ireland at the Trinity University Conference on Mercy versus Sacrifice, and the keynote speaker at the National Women's Studies Conference in Finland at the University of Oulu. Together with several others in the group International Feminists for a Gift Economy, she gave two panels in Nairobi at the World Social Forum in January. She has spoken at a number of semiotics conferences, I'll get correction from her soon, I'm sure, in Italy and Finland. She recently presented her paper, Making Unilateral Gift Giving Visible, on a panel on the gift economy at the American Association of Anthropology in Washington, D.C. Welcome, Genevieve.
Thank you so much, Janie. That's quite an introduction.
It is. And at last you get to speak. I'm so delighted to have you as my guest, and I know our listening audience is too.
Well, thank you very much. I'm delighted to be on your show.
You know, the first question I usually ask my guests is, how did your own mother influence you to become the woman that you are today?
Well, I've been thinking about that. I think my mother was quite a moralist. She cared a lot about how things were done. And I disagreed with her on that, of course, as a teenager. But she died when I was about 23. And I always have kept the legacy of her feeling that things were important, that it is important what you do. Not that I inherited her specific morality around things, but that I realized that the life is important and what you do is important. It's not something to take too lightly.
Well, that's quite a learning.
It was a great learning, and it's kept me, I don't know, maybe interested in everything that's happening all my life, really. And the other thing is too that when your mother dies when you're young, you maybe think more about Mother Earth and Mother Universe than you would otherwise. I don't know. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yes. Well, it surely shifts things without your mother being there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the video of your life, A Giving for Giving, that's the title of it, is it not?
Yeah.
Is wonderful. And this hour-long video, and has wonderful photographs of your growing up years and your family, and continues on with your mothering your own beautiful little children. You know, it's quite a remarkable thing that you have done, giving away your money. And I'm wondering where this idea of giving came to you.
Well, it actually came from the theory that I was developing about the gift economy, as well as, I guess, my family had a foundation, and they, my father and my mother and so on, they participated in a foundation that they had created, and one that my grandparents had created. But more than that, it was just the theory of the thing that helped me become empowered enough to do it myself in a different way, not through just traditional foundation, but doing it for social change and for women. I can tell you the story about how I began to think along these lines. Mm-hmm. When I was growing up, I had money and other people didn't, and I always wondered why that was, and how could some people be rich and other people be poor? And, you know, a number of explanations were given to me, such as rich people are smart and poor people are not, or rich people are industrious and poor people are lazy, and that kind of thing, which didn't satisfy me at all, because I knew plenty of smart and industrious poor people. Mm-hmm. But finally, I met this Italian philosopher who I later married, and he told me that poor people are poor because rich people are rich. That is, there's a transfer of wealth going on between one and the other. And that finally made sense to me. As my theory has developed, I have begun to consider that a gift that poor people are giving to rich people, but that I'm getting ahead of myself on that. After I got married to this Italian philosopher, he got invited to go to Bologna to talk about starting a new academic journal together with some other people, and they were going to apply Marx's analysis of the commodity and money to language. And that idea totally enthralled me. I was just bowled over by what they said. I had one of those aha moments when, you know, you think you can understand everything. But then I, of course, lost all of the particulars of that, or almost all of them. My husband did develop a theory of language as based on exchange, or he wrote a book called Language as Labor and Trade. It was about applying the market to language, or language to the market. But I had little children. They were not exchanging, and they were too little to understand money, and yet they were speaking, so language had to come before exchange, I believed, and it was something else. Couldn't be the market that it came from. And so for years I thought about this and worked on it, and then it occurred to me that communication and exchange are two different things, although we usually put them together. And that communication is actually based on gift giving. That is, giving to satisfy the communicative needs of the other person, not of your communicative needs, of the other person, to put that person in relation to something that's in your environment or the world around you, or your thoughts or whatever it may be. Looking at communication as gift giving gave me the impetus to look at the gift giving that was going on in indigenous societies, which were so-called pre-capitalist or pre-market societies. And I could see, of course, in those societies, people certainly were talking, but they didn't have markets. That they had maybe gifting circles, but the market itself is not a necessary part of human life. It's something that we've invented to distribute goods, and really we're distributing goods very badly through the market, because we now have 2% of the population of the world own 50% of the wealth. But we don't have to do things that way. We don't have to use the market to distribute our goods. We could distribute them directly, and psychologically it's so much better for us to give and receive directly rather than exchanging everything and trying to profit from it. So as I began to understand this and look at indigenous societies, I became a feminist around that time, which I guess is around 1978, the same year I got a divorce as well. And the consciousness-raising group that I was in discussed women's housework and how that was free. And I realized it's a huge gift that women are giving to the market economy.
Absolutely.
Then realizing that housework is such a huge gift to the market, I was beginning to realize all of the other kinds of free gifts that are being given in society all the time that we don't really look at. And also, we don't usually look at mothering as having anything to do with communication. But I think it's a unilateral gift. It's gift-giving directly to satisfy needs, that is the basic human logic, the basic human interaction. And that is what creates bonds among people, because the giver gives to somebody, they have to see what the need is and make something or produce something to satisfy that need. The point of the interaction is the well-being of the other person. So the person who is the giver has to recognize the receiver. And the receiver is not passive, but has to be able to use whatever is given to her in a creative way. The child has to be able to swallow the food and digest it, and her body has to function in order to allow that gift to come to fruition. The receiver often also recognizes the giver as the source of the gift. She doesn't have to. It doesn't necessarily become some kind of an exchange. It's just that she responds. And there has been a lot of discussion of gift-giving in the last 10 or 20 years by a number of academics. There's the Derrida talked a lot about gift-giving. He had a criticism. He thought that there couldn't be unilateral gift-giving because it's almost always recognized. As soon as the gift is recognized as a gift, he thought that was a payoff to the giver. And my response to that is that if everyone were doing gift-giving, it wouldn't be anything special to do it. It would be, you wouldn't get any special recognition for doing it. It's the odd situation that we've created by having the market be the context for all of our actions that makes gift-giving unusual and strange. And so it makes it a special thing to give. And then you get recognized for that, and that turns it into an exchange. But if everyone were doing it, then it wouldn't be there wouldn't be any particular recognition.
Right.
And I have to say that that often happens with mothers, because mothers are doing all this giving all the time, and nobody's recognizing them.
That's true. So, it's not even noticed.
Yeah. Not even noticed. So it kind of proves my point, I think, that there is actually a lot of hidden unilateral gift-giving going on, especially by women in taking care of everybody.
That's right. And you think of, well, you know, you think of in a family that if you have siblings, even as adults, that you would help each other, and there isn't a price tag attached to it. It's just how you live.
That's right. That's right. But we often, since we live in this market economy, we are sort of magnetized into the values of the market. And we believe that only if we're paid for something is it worth anything. Even among brothers and sisters, that can happen. It doesn't always.
I'm sure.
It can happen that way. And even between married people or partners and so forth, I washed the dishes tonight. Now you have to wash the dishes.
Mm-hmm.
There's a sort of, you're not, the other person isn't giving enough and that kind of thing that really ruins the relationship. And so, but we don't realize that gift giving is itself a positive thing, and we've learned to discredit it as we discredit women. I mean, it's all part of a sort of a general misogyny from thousands of years,
right,
that is still weighing on us.
You write that the mechanism of the market, in a self-confirming game of smoke and mirrors, makes it appear that it is the source of wealth and the distributor of need-satisfying goods. However, it is the flow of unilateral gifts from the many to the few that is actually creating that captured abundance. The free portion of cheap labor of the many, the low-cost raw materials, and the margins caused by level of life in different areas function to subsidize the market and create the profit which motivates it. In fact, the market is actually parasitic on the gifts of the many. It is the invisibility of the flow of gifts and the ostentation, the visibility of those who reap advantages, which make it appear that the market is a source of good for all. Reciprocal gift exchange in this situation, the exchange of favors, serves to solidify a capitalist class community. Festivals and monetary gifts circulate to create networks and dependencies in mafia-like corporate cultures for groups like Enron, but also for the political, military, industrial elites. Elections are financed in this way, and politicians' dependence on gifts that they must later reciprocate seems to be the normal way for democracy to function. Moreover, the values of patriarchy inform the exchange economy, the drive to accumulate and dominate, independence, indifference to the needs of others, competitiveness serve the market, motivating it to such an extent that we should call the system we live in patriarchal capitalism, or with a slightly different emphasis, capitalist patriarchy.
Yeah, exactly. And I think if we can understand that capitalism is patriarchal, we can unite the feminist movement in a more radical criticism, both of patriarchy and of capitalism. We really have to create a different kind of economy, and a way where needs can get satisfied rather than greed being satisfied. If we don't do that, we are going to totally destroy the earth and not have any gift-giving possible for the future generations. So it may seem unrealistic to think that we could create an economy based on mothering, but we need to do that because we are actually all human beings are actually basically maternal. That is why I talk about homo donans instead of homo sapiens, homo donans as the gift-giving being rather than homo sapiens just as the knowing being. Because you, even when you're a child, you have to be given to before you can know. And we're all in receivership of the gifts of the earth and of our environment. All of our perceptions come to us free from the world around us. And if we project the mother onto the world around us instead of some dead objectivity, then we can live in gratitude for what we are given rather than destroying nature as we're doing. I think really it is the market is a psychological tool that we've created that we are hurting ourselves with and transforming ourselves into beings that are destructive, destroying the earth and each other.
That's right. You also write that men can perform the mothering role as well, but their gender identity, at least in male-dominant Euro-America, is usually constructed in opposition to gift-giving mothering. In this early construction, which I call masculation, boys give up the prototype of the gift-giving mother for their human identity and replace it with the prototype of the dominant father. In psychology, of course, you have to separate from the mother. There's all of this talk, which obviously was unheard of in the beginning.
Yeah.
And it's nonsense.
Exactly. We need to be independent to some extent, and mothers can help by furthering that independence. A mother that would not let her child be independent enough to walk would be a bad mother. She wouldn't be satisfying that need. And beyond that, in many other aspects of life, everyone needs to be independent. But that doesn't mean they have to give up the maternal values, that is, the values of care of others. And that is just what has happened in this masculation process. The boy feels like he has to be the opposite, because he's in an opposite gender, of his gift-giving mother, and that gift-giving, that nurturing, seems to be the main thing about mothers to little children, obviously, because that's the biggest part of their lives. So they have to, the boys have to become something other than the mother.
They have to close down their hearts, which is just awful.
Yeah, and one of the things they do, I think, is that they replace this gift-giving with hitting. That is, gift-giving touches the other person and establishes a relationship with the other person. But hitting also touches the other person and establishes a relationship, but one of domination rather than one of mutuality and trust.
Yes.
Anyway, I think that this hitting that little boys develop instead of giving and instead of nurturing, then itself mushrooms into wars, into adult violence. Mm. We have a masculine identity or a masculated identity, which is warlike in our society. Not all men are like that. Doesn't infect all men equally, but this is a sort of a cultural ideal of this warlike male. And our presidents, our vice presidents and so forth are acting out an agenda that has to do with that. And with being the one at the top, that is, being the model of the non-giving human, the one that's imposing and dominating, we could get around that. That I think it is something that is emphasized and made worse by the market, because the market is also based on a one-to-many interaction, with money being the one and the commodities being the many.
Oh yes, and the greed is
seems to reign. People want to possess
yes.
the one and be the one at the top. That's why I call it patriarchal capitalism. Is that rush to the top?
Yes.
Trying to.
One of my feelings has been that because little boys are in so many ways instructed not to feel, not to let their feelings show, not to need, and so in a way it means not to love.
Right.
And when you can't have love, then money is the only thing that's left.
Right.
And it seems to me that's exactly what we are seeing in our world culture.
And, but the thing is that if you're taught not to feel, then you don't respond to the needs of other people.
That's
and so
right.
you can't do the gift giving.
That's right. You don't feel your own pain. You don't feel others' pain. That's right.
That keeps you from having to do that gift giving interaction.
You write in, again, in your book, Forgiving, a Feminist Criticism of Exchange, in the section Knowledge of the Heart. This book is wonderful, and that it's available to anyone who visits your website is a wonderful gift for us all, along with all your other work. Thank you.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
But you write, humans are basically loving beings. Our social structures and the logic of exchange are patriarchal distortions of love. The sharing and caring which we experience in the original mother-child relation are often the only experience of free love we have, and they become the model for us for the rest of our lives. This is the reason early childhood is so important for our psychology. All the rest of our lives, we have to deal with the various distortions and blockages of love. Our nostalgia for childhood, even for the womb, is nostalgic for a primary period of health which has never returned, because there is no social or economic structure that permits it. Our independence is so distorted that we belittle dependence instead of honoring it. We insist on standing alone, and yet we are a mass of individuals crying to be touched, fed, caressed, supported. That's beautiful.
Well, it's unfortunately it's true, I think.
It is. I feel it as I read it.
Well, but since I wrote, after I wrote that, I came in touch with these people that are doing matriarchal studies in Germany and elsewhere. And I went to this conference in Germany in Luxembourg that Heidi Bendroth-Gottner had created. This really mm-hmm. great conference, inviting a lot of people. And then I thought it was so great that we had another one in Texas, following up on that. But it showed me that there are matriarchal societies still, and there were many more before capitalism, that have, with the gift economy in the matriarchal structures, it gives a place to children to grow up into a gift economy where mothering is still honored, and so it's much healthier. And gift-giving beings growing up into an exchange economy hurts us. But if we grow up into a matriarchal economy with the values that come from that, we can live in a better and saner way. And that would be what I would hope for the world, but not matriarchy in terms of a mirror image of patriarchy, but matriarchy in terms of an egalitarian society where maternal principles are honored. I think that is one of the things that Heidi has done, is to insist on this fact that matriarchies are not mirror images of patriarchy. There are other people like the anthropologist Peggy Sande, who studied the Minangkabau in Sumatra. And there, too, she says the same thing, that it is the maternal values and not a replay of a power over structure mm-hmm. of patriarchy.
Right. Well, there's obviously from your conferences, there is a whole group, a large group of women from all parts of the world who are really working on bringing this forward. There's going to be an International Mothers Summit in 2008.
Right, in Germany. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, and I'm going to give a talk at that as well.
It says, from a motherless society to a symbolic order of the mother.
Yeah. I mean, I think that probably patriarchy has over-sentimentalized mothering, and so feminists have been rightly wary of that, but really, I think mothering is actually an economy. If you look at it as a mode of distribution that puts its feet back on the ground, and we can respect that everyone can do that kind of mode of distribution, and probably also see how mothering has been diminished and destroyed and taken advantage of, made to give to the dominators by patriarchy. So we can understand both what we ought to do and what we're doing now that we shouldn't be doing mm-hmm. if we shine that particular light on things.
Yes. Yeah. I'm going to open the phone lines now, so if anyone would like to call in.
Well, the one thing I did want to add, though, to go back to the beginning, is that with this theory behind me, this empowered me to be able to use my money for social change and to try to bring forth the idea of the gift economy, and that's why the movie is called Giving for Giving, because I have done the gift giving a lot at that level, trying to promote this idea of a gift economy. I think we're in such critical times now that anything we can do is a good thing.
Well, indigenous peoples, of course, know all about gift giving.
Well, many indigenous societies mm-hmm. have or had gift economies. They have been also so colonized by European and other groups that they've had a lot of difficulty in maintaining their traditions. But many of them have, and it's really a great thing. It's something that we can use as a model.
We have a call.
Okay.
Good evening. You're on Women's Voices.
Good evening. I wanted to bring up a concept that I had been thinking about. Finding who you really are, and that's the best gift that you can give humanity, is really doing that soul searching and that understanding of who you are, and that's a great gift. And I wanted to know what your thoughts were on that.
I think that is it is a gift, but I'm concerned about the billions of people who are starving or are dying of curable diseases, that kind of thing. I've had a chance to travel a lot, and I think that when you see the people living on garbage dumps and that kind of stuff, you realize, like I said in the beginning, rich people are rich because poor people are poor. And in our economy in the world, the global economy, our economy is taking from them and bringing the wealth here and leaving them with nothing. So I think it's great to be able to find out who you really are, look within yourself, but who we really are gift givers. And who we really are people who are not only longing to be touched and given to, but people who are longing to give
right.
in some kind of a meaningful way.
I think I'm also thinking more of the trades and what it is you choose to do in your life.
Well, whatever we're doing, whatever we grow up and do in this society is basically going to be part of capitalism.
Well, does it have to be, though?
Well, some people are now choosing to be to live in alternative communities and trying to do things differently, practically differently. But I think the most important thing is to try to change the society, the bigger picture. And so that's what I think.
Well, I'm interested in reading your book, so I'll go to your website.
Oh, great.
In your book, Forgiving, in the chapter From the Garden, you write, one of the reasons for our misunderstanding of gift giving is that we see God as the greatest giver, and he is male. Thus we mix gift-giving characteristics with the characteristics of masculation. If we understood God the giver as female, perhaps we would come to the consciousness of the paradigm more easily. Perhaps she is really pure altruism, a you-first spirit, and that's why she is invisible. She creates things and loves them in a you-first way, and then goes on creating and loving others. If we cannot love each other, we block her movement. Putting giving into the province of the male model hides the fact that women have already been doing it everywhere, all the time. Even the sacrifice of Christ's life distracts our attention from the amount of sacrifice that has been done everywhere by women for their children, husbands, and others. Our gratitude is turned toward a male giver as the source, disguising the mother model.
That's right. I think that the movement towards the feminine spirituality, female divine, is really important now, this movement that's happening, because it avoids that mixing giving with masculation.
Yes.
But I think you can see also in a lot of religious hierarchies that it seems to be that the ones at the top are the givers. At least they are the ones that give more words, more commands, more judgments, let's say. And those are the males at the top. But there are also those that are, you know, the big gift givers that are men. And I have to say that I think, although it's good that Bill Gates and Warren Buffett are giving a lot of their fortunes away, that it, the same thing applies there. We need the women to be in evidence, the women gift givers, in a way which is done in some other way, a different, the way that women would do it, rather than the way that men do it. That would be important for, I think, philanthropy, if women philanthropists were more visible, and that they didn't do it according to the male standards. Mm-hmm. And I did try to do that as much as I could. And though I guess I didn't always succeed in doing it, but it was certainly, it was an experiment and an adventure for many years. Yeah. I'm not doing it anymore because I spent almost all my money, so I'm not doing it. It was a great thing to be part of.
Yeah, well, you created things out of it.
Yeah,
You brought indigenous people into a fold of having a voice where they might not have had otherwise. You've done many things along that line.
Right. Well, they were good enough to come too. I mean,
Sure.
But we did a lot of very interesting projects for a long time, and feel very blessed to have been able to do that.
Well, it seems to me what you're doing now, which is very, very exciting, is that you're speaking all over the world about the gift economy.
Yeah, I am, because before I practiced it, and now I'm speaking about it. Well, I started out with a theory of it, then I did the practice of it in the way that I could, but you know, people are practicing it all the time, and you don't have to have money to be able to practice gift giving. So I don't suggest that you do only gift giving unless you want to go live in an alternative community. There are many things that you are doing already in your life, I'm sure, from volunteerism to just smiling at your neighbor, that are actually satisfying needs. The biggest needs that we have now are the needs for social change. That is, so activism and work to change society for the better, the peace movement, all of those things are very important as needs to satisfy gifts that we can give, that everyone can give. And I did develop this theory of language as based on gift giving and communication also. And if we are using gift giving to communicate, then what we are really basically is gift givers and receivers. So we can change the definition of a human being from a warlike, masculated male model to this gift-giving model, a communicative, community-making human being. And in fact, communication is communicating. education. Muni means gifts in Latin. So it would be giving gifts together is communication and community.
Wow. Oh, here's another call. Good evening. You're on Women's Voices.
Hi. This may sound silly, but I just wanted to say this anyway. I would love to get lots of hugs as gifts, and I would be willing to give lots of hugs in return. And it just doesn't seem like there's enough hugs available in this world.
That's right.
Only one woman I know gives a really wonderful hug, and I thank her for that. Everyone else is kind of, you know, like, oh, there, it's kind of timid, like, oh, you know, we can't give a really good hug. It's just, it's not done or not proper, or too much feeling in it or something.
That's wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, I think that just because of the market economy, we're all standing we're suspicious of each other because we're afraid somebody's going to cheat us. That makes us get farther away from each other so that we end up not hugging each other and not touching each other.
And I think we're all hungry for it. You're not alone.
Yeah.
I do a lot of hugging myself.
Hugging is revolutionary then.
He's
hugging to defeat patriarchal capitalism.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks for understanding.
Thank you for calling. Oh, here's another call. Good evening. You're on Women's Voices, and we are getting close to the end, so please be brief.
Okay. I hope it can be answered briefly. I'm just wondering if your guest would have any suggestions on how we could put her principles into work in creating an alternative economic system.
Good question.
I think there needs to be a paradigm shift in our thinking in our society the societies that are based on the market. In order to create a new economic system or go back to an old one or take some of the principles from old economic systems and use them again in a new way, we really have to think differently. We have to stop valuing capitalism and try to do something another way. So I think it would be really hard to try to create a new economic system without looking at the values that we have and how our brains have been washed by capitalism. So I don't suggest a different economic system till we can shift the paradigm. And at that time, as we shift the paradigm, we will liberate all of our thinking towards something that is functional for everyone. But people are, like I said, there are lots of experiments already going on gift giving, from free cycling, let's say, to free software, to people who are working on copyleft instead of copyright, free intellectual property, and alternative communities of various kinds. So, you know, there's lots going on already. I don't think we can really unify those or get a bigger picture way of doing things until we change the way we think.
We do have another phone call. Good evening. You're on Women's Voices.
Good evening. And I just wanted to say that this is the best show that's been on this radio station for about 12 years. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Yeah, the website is www.gift-economy.com.
Thank you, Jen. It's been just wonderful having
you. Oh, thank you, Janie. Thank you so much for having me. Okay, I appreciate it a lot, and peace to everyone.
Many are the hearts that are weary, the next step unable to see. Night in darkness, blinded, unable to see, with hands outreached, we search for the dawning of the new age to be. is out and beckons us on through the night and into the dawn. Her love surrounds us every step of the way, unfolding our life today. It's in our hearts that the answers will come, calling as never before. The truth and the light will fill up the darkness, and our love will reign from the rooftops, this life.